Hello, and welcome to the Movie Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting a movie that we think you'll find interesting. In this episode, I'm joined by my sister, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the Beverly Hills Cop movie from 1984. This is the original. I know I saw this back when it first came out or thereabouts. It would have had to have been in the theaters, I imagine. It was, I guess VHS and home rental and stuff was sort of a thing at that point, but...
just starting.
I'm trying to remember. Anyways, I saw this maybe not exactly 40 years ago or whatever, but at least 30-some-odd. This is early in Eddie Murphy's career. He was obviously a big name at the time, and I think this is one of the things that kind of kicked him up a notch.
Well, and it looked like he did a lot of the, like, jumping the fence, or at least dropping down from the fence, and things like that himself. Definitely has stuntman. No denying that.
Yeah, I wouldn't say he did his own stunts, but there were definitely a few things of vaulting the fence or whatever he clearly did.
Mm-hmm.
But we figure he was, what, mid-20s at the time?
Yeah.
So he probably would have been embarrassed not to have.
Well, I think there's an element of having fun.
And it seems like everybody in the film is having a good time.
There are times, and I think a great example of it is, and I mean, it's almost become cliche at this point, the sending room service out to the people who are staking out his hotel. But there's this moment where he has snuck up behind the car and the bellboy who's delivering the room service sees him and they exchange winks.
Yeah. Well, it may seem cliche now.
Now. Yes.
Groundbreaking for the film, you know?
Well, and that's the funny thing. Groundbreaking for the film, and yet you fast forward 5 or 10 years and you've got Princess Diana in all the headlines. And it's another 5 or 10 years later that people are recalling, too. On the one hand, she hated having all those photographers camped out outside her apartment. And on the other hand, she felt bad for them when the weather was really cold and really bad. And so she would order 10 or 20 pizzas to be delivered to the troop of photographers. And it's a life-imitating art moment.
Yeah. Well, and watching a film that's 40 years old, I think that's old enough you can call it vintage, legitimately.
Mm-hmm.
One, it's a great film. It holds up. Two, it was a different era of filmmaking.
Yes.
I mean, to the point where in the credits, there's a negative cutter who's the guy who actually cut the negative during the editing and stuff.
Yeah.
Back when that was still a thing.
Well, even during the viewing of the movie, we were commenting on the different use of music in the background.
Yes. This was from a period where there was not just, oh, we've got to have mood music or something. I mean, Axel F., which is used throughout the film, is, again, the signature sound of Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah.
And they've got a great soundtrack of other songs throughout, too.
Well, and what I loved is while it is primarily the song that I would associate with the character, Axel Foley, it's not his alone.
Yeah.
It's the action song. It's the things are happening song. It's the pay attention, well, you're going to enjoy this song.
It's the signature tune of the movie and the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
And if you flip channels and watch a few minutes, the minute you hear that song or recognizable chunks of it, which you listen for more than about 30 seconds, and you're going to have hit one of those points. Not that it takes that long of the music, but it seems like it's used that frequently.
It's the song school bands started playing.
Oh, it's great music.
It really is.
But other films of around this era, give or take, that had a similar musical signature, Driving Miss Daisy, I would argue that Top Gun had its opening anthem and stuff like that. And it's funny because we've seen a few other films where while we're watching it, we're commenting, it's like, that's Marvel music that's playing, you know, MCU music, and it's not an MCU film.
Yeah.
But it's evocative of. And I saw this YouTube video a while back where they explain why that sort of a thing happens. But basically, they're putting together the film. It's like, we gotta have some music for the rough cut, but, you know, we haven't figured out all the music yet, so we'll just put placeholders here and there. It's like when you watch a trailer and it's like, this is Stargate music, this music's from here, this music's from here. But then they end up cutting the film to that music.
Yeah, yeah.
But can't use that music. So they have to get music that sounds like that music or has the feel of that music, or at the very least, the beat and the moments of that music.
Mm-hmm. Well, we watched something recently that did a great job kind of counterpointing very Western European, American, British music to Russian music.
Mm-hmm.
To go with the two different sides of a conflict.
Well, and what I liked here is they did a good job balancing the songs that were used throughout, and they were great, memorable songs.
They were not just evocative of the decade that this new movie was from, but they are songs that hold up to the test of time and are still good, solid songs.
Well, and I have to wonder how much of that is because the song is that good or the movie made it that popular. And I think it's a little of both.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly with Axel F., it's a catchy tune.
Yeah.
But without the film, would anyone have even heard it? And it was clearly done for the movie and such, but some of the other actual songs they use, The Heat Is On, a few of the others, and there are a couple that become very much associated with the film.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a franchise that spawned a sequel a couple of years later. The third sequel was about 10 years after the first. As we were prepping to watch this, we noticed there was a Beverly Hills Cop from, when was that?
2013?
2013 or something?
Yeah.
That seemed to be a made-for-TV movie or pilot episode, maybe?
Yeah, very interesting.
And granted, I haven't had time to read the IMDb page on it, but it looks like it's Axel's son having adventures and such.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a more recent Netflix Beverly Hills Cop, Axel F. So when you've got a character that's fairly versatile, you could drop this character in almost anywhere. And granted, Beverly Hills Cop, you got to keep putting him back there.
Yeah.
But you can do some more in Detroit. There's no reason you couldn't have things branching out into other places.
Well, and we very clearly established, I would say, three cops from Beverly Hills. Rosewood, who I would prefer to call Billy because he was mostly by his first name. Taggart, and then the Lieutenant Bogomil.
Yes, yes.
So really, any of the three of those could go to Detroit.
Well, Billy and Taggart could. It'd be a harder sell to get the lieutenant there. Why would he have gone? Why would he get pulling Axel? I mean,
one of the interesting things for me about the movie is you start with the rule breaker. The guy who sees the irresistible opportunity to fight crime. And irresistible is the right word.
He's doing the right things, but the letter of the law, he's not going to necessarily toe the line on.
And he finds himself vacationing in the jurisdiction of a department that follows the rules. And even when a lie about the situation and how they came to be there to foil a crime would keep them from being reprimanded, they, George Washington, cannot tell a lie.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of the movie, we've got them recognizing sometimes you just have to tell the powers that be what they want to hear so that you can get to the part where you say, and we foiled the crime.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's not to say you're covering up breaking laws or covering up dispensing with the rights of the criminal.
Well, it's funny because it gave a character arc to multiple characters.
Yes, yes.
I mean, certainly with Billy, with Taggart, with the lieutenant and stuff.
Well, Billy came to realize that the letter of the law is excellent. But if the letter of the law says, and following the rule book, says, I can witness a kidnapping.
And do nothing about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then something is wrong with how I'm reading the rule book and abiding by it.
Well, you gotta have rules to have society.
Yes.
But no rule can capture every situation.
Mm-hmm.
So there's got to be a little bit of give and take there. The rule's got to stand 99.9% of the time, and you can't let people just break it for the hell of it.
Mm-hmm.
But there are going to be extenuating circumstances.
Yeah. And I really think Billy was put in the best position to both see that and show us that with the witnessing the kidnapping.
Yeah.
And feeling powerless.
Well, I'm bringing Taggart over of Billy's got to do this. Taggart can't let him go it alone.
Yeah. And Taggart's a good partner in general, but specifically for Billy.
Yes. Yes. Well, and I liked the arc of the lieutenant going from what looks like the authority figure that's going to be kind of the person they butt heads with,
mm-hmm.
but really coming around and having their side.
Well, and starting on the side of the authority figure back in Detroit.
Yeah.
Of, if you're out here investigating the crime from Detroit, I'm supposed to call and rat you out, basically.
Well, for me, the turning point with the lieutenant is when Foley's like, I know this, but I can't prove it, and I'll come to you when I can. And he's like, oh, don't worry about that. Tell me what you got.
Yes. And that was a beautiful scene.
Yeah. That was a turning point for the character and the plot.
Yes.
Because it very easily could have gone more cliche. And I'm not trying to suggest that this movie is wildly original.
No, but it's both very good for its time, but it's also very different from what we would have now. And I say that because now Jenny would have actually been in on the plot.
Probably. Well, I think it was also different from what we had prior to this. We'd had cop movies. We'd had, essentially, this is kind of sort of a buddy cop movie, not quite.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly a comedic cop film. We had those before, had them since. But it balanced a lot of those aspects. It had enough of a through line for the crime aspect of it without that really being that big of a plot point.
Yeah. Well, and I would argue that it brought in some of the best aspects of the old westerns. I mean, you've got Eddie Murphy, his Axel Foley is the marshal who he is on his own. He has blown into town and he's going to stand up for what's right,
mm-hmm.
even if the members of the community aren't going to help him. And I think they found a lot of the threads that they had in the westerns 20 and 30 years before this that they weren't getting to put in movies at the time. And so, okay, how can we pull them in and give those familiar tones?
Yeah. Well, and there's a lot of aspects of this that hit the notes it has to hit for this sort of a story to work.
Mm-hmm.
Does it sometimes in a very expected manner, a lot of times a very unexpected manner. And some people would have created a film like this and said, well, we got to understand the whole, why is the bad guy doing this stuff? He's evil. That's all we need to know.
Yeah.
You know? We needed to have somebody die at the beginning to motivate the hero. We've got to have it pay off at the end. There's certain story aspects that if they do not happen, the movie does not work.
Well, and we didn't feel the need to give the major bad guy either some kind of the Beverly Hills cops have been after him for years, but haven't been able to prove it. Or the flip side, he looks so good to be true.
Yeah.
That it can't possibly be him, and we didn't make him best friends with the chief of police, either.
No, there are a number of cliche things they could have done. And it's just, hey, here's a guy who's doing some crime. He was probably going to get caught sooner or later, but probably later. He's flying under the radar. He's not doing anything too crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But he crossed, essentially, the wrong person.
Yeah.
With Axel Foley and stuff.
And they acknowledged just how short a movie it could have been.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Should have killed you when I had the chance, essentially.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, we've got Eddie Murphy, who, brilliant comedian, does a great mm-hmm. job here. Judge Reinhold, as Billy Rosewood, does a great job.
Yeah.
I think this is probably one of his signature roles, if not the signature role. I know he's done other stuff, but this is what I associate him with. John Ashton, as Taggart, did a great job. Ronnie Cox, as the lieutenant.
He nailed it.
I think this is one of his more likable characters.
Yeah, that's true.
And then there are a few other people that I had forgotten were in here. Jonathan Banks from Wise Guy is what I would really associate him with. One of the ones that I knew was in here and enjoy every time I see him is Bronson Pinchot from Perfect Strangers.
You know, he has been doing interviews in connection with the newest movie coming out. And he was saying at the height of his Beverly Hills Cop fame, he was receiving death threats.
Why?
I didn't pursue it because at the time I flipped by it and I was like, that just, to me, that's inconceivable.
At some point, I may go back and rewatch all of Perfect Strangers, which was him and Larry Applewhite, I think?
Mark Lynn Baker.
Oh, Mark Lynn Baker, that's right. Larry may have been the character played, actually. But Mark Lynn Baker, those two did great physical comedy and just comedy in general. And I would say was one of, and granted, that show was probably 30 years ago now.
Yeah.
But one of the more recent kind of comedy duos that we've had on TV that they just play off each other so well.
Well, they were an odd couple for their generation.
Well, they were the classic sitcom wackiness ensues duo.
Yeah.
The Lucy and Ethel of their time, if you will.
Well, and they really handled the We Are a Nation of Immigrants.
Yes. Yeah. And from both sides of it and stuff.
But yeah.
Yeah. He was great. Paul Reiser from Mad About You, among other things.
Yeah.
Was in the opening bit in Detroit. He was, I don't say blink and you miss him, but not a large part of this story. One of the other ones that I recognized, well, obviously Damon Wayans, when you see him.
Yeah.
And he's got literally a blink and you miss it. He's in for one scene, that's it, but did a fine job. And again, this was 40 years ago. Some of these people were just starting out.
Yeah.
And then Rick Overton was in there as a warehouse supervisor for a scene or two. I have seen him in a number of things, but what I most associate him with is he played Rufus in the Bill and Ted TV show.
Ah, yeah.
And I think he was also in, I want to say, Leverage as one of the cops.
Oh, interesting.
I could be wrong on that. But they found a lot of people that were coming up through the business, got some great material out of them, even if they were just in a scene or two. And I think they did a good job. It was a well-directed film. It was well-edited. Everything flowed. It was well-written. I mean, it's an hour and 45-minute film, but the time just flies by.
Yeah. Well, and good comedy throughout, both physical as well as scripted.
Yes, yes. I think it was a movie that's easy to dismiss as it's just another of its type or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's another of its type the same way that Die Hard is another of its type.
Yeah.
Or some of those that, yeah, we've seen movies kind of like this, but they, in some cases like Die Hard, almost create a new sub-franchise or sub-genre, if you will.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if I'd say, I mean, to a degree, this did. It's not like we'd never gotten the comedic cop film or whatever, but this didn't do it as a farce, like the Inspector Clouseau, Pink Panther type stuff. It works as a, again, just an action-adventure cop film with good comedic moments and stuff. So I think it was well done all the way around, and I don't feel that there was anything in it that, you know, 40 years later, made it feel dated. And there were a couple of times you're like, well, doesn't he have a radio? It's like, well, it was the 80s. I don't think he might. I mean, not necessarily.
Well, it was the cop car.
The cop car.
I was figuring, doesn't the cop car have a radio? And then when he drives away from that scene, he reaches down and picks up the radio. And I'm like, so he could have used it sooner.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I think the one thing that felt dated to me was we're opening in Detroit. We've set up Axel. He's selling stuff out of the back of a truck. Police chase ensues. And the police cars have these ginormous lights on them, you know, the spin around type.
Mm-hmm.
But these things look like, I don't know, they're a foot wide and about a foot tall or whatever. It seemed just so disproportionate to the car.
Yeah, yeah.
It was hilarious. And that's, again, from, you know, a modern vantage point before, you know, it was before LEDs and whatnot streamlined the look of things. Yeah, Rick Overton played Taggart in Leverage.
Well, that's funny.
Not to be confused with the Taggart.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I thought this was a ton of fun. I knew there was the Netflix movie that had come out recently, and I figured it'd be fun to go back through the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious if we can find the 2013 or whatever, the TV movie thing. Because I didn't even know that existed, and I think it'd be fun to do.
Well, and apparently Eddie Murphy is in it, even if it's only briefly.
Yeah, I can see where he would set that up as extending the franchise, and he could always guest star or what have you, or whatever the plan was.
I'm
curious to learn more about that one. But this is something that I'm not the least bit surprised he's going back to the role. It's a fun role. It's lighthearted, fun movies. I'm surprised he hasn't gone back to it more often.
Yeah. It's a good character. I remembered very little about the movie, but I did remember part of how he got the hotel room and the irony of how he paid for the hotel room.
I think for me, the part I mainly remembered was the mansion and the gunfight. Not specifics of it.
But, that's fine.
You know, like the staircase getting shot up and all that sort of. Because those guys are literally waving Uzis around.
I love Billy and his police shield in that.
Yeah, like the little badge is going to protect you, buddy.
Yeah, I loved that.
But there was a couple of times the guys were literally just spraying it like it's a hose or something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a good film. Like I said, it holds up. And I think this falls into that category of film of cultural literacy.
Mm-hmm.
There are some films, if you haven't seen it, who the hell cares? There are others that it was not just a movie of its generation, but one of the movies of its generation.
Yeah.
And I think this falls into that category.
Well, it's funny to me that more and more of the cable networks that have classics in the name have started showing movies that are from within my lifetime. Because I think of classics as having been from, you know, 20 or 30 years before I was born. And they
the
still,
50s, the 60s at least, yeah.
You know, but I can see this airing on one of those classics channels, and I would be sitting there going, yeah, it belongs. I get it.
There's a part of me that still rebels. Is this a classic or not? You know, I don't know, but I'm not saying it's not. Certainly, it's got the quality for it. It's got the entertainment value. It holds up. But I guess for me, I don't know what the term is I would use, and I'm sure a lot of people probably would use classic for this, that are, again, those movies that if you could only pick two or three movies out of a year, and say, okay, we're going to educate you on American culture.
Yeah.
What would they be? And there are a few years where there's got to be more than that.
Well, it's a cross between wanting that and, like, we have friends with kids who are 15 and under. And it's the, when I recommend movies for those kids to watch, I would put this in the list.
There's enough for profanity, I wouldn't do it for kids, but once they hit a particular age or whatever, this is one.
I guess my point is for the generations behind us.
Yes. At some point they should watch it. I'm just saying they need to.
Yeah. Okay. I'm
age appropriate. It's not like it's an earth shattering, brilliant film either, but it's just so much fun.
Yeah. It's good entertainment.
Yeah. And if I've got to pick between it's brilliant or it's fun, I go with fun. And I would say out of all of Eddie Murphy's films, and he's done a ton of them.
Yeah.
This is one of the highlights on there. I'm trying to think what else would be.
Trading Places? Yeah. Coming to America?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. He's just done, again, so many. Because he did some of the Doolittle stuff.
Mm.
He did, I want to say, some other Disney-esque type material. And if you include some of his voiceover work, that it brings in all the Shrek movies.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he's just got such a long body of work.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it was terrific. Some of it didn't do so well.
I mean, for me, some of it is, it's that early work that was heavy on the comedy and kind of before there was a lot of pressure on him to be maintaining what he'd already done, if that makes sense.
Well, but he did things like Dr. Doolittle, The Nutty Professor, and some stuff like that. And some of those were better than others. And he made a joke at one point that when he was on the talk show circuits with his comeback or whatever, it's like, I haven't come back. I didn't go anywhere. Y'all just didn't come see my films.
Yeah, yeah.
He did things like Harlem Nights, 48 Hours, another 48 Hours. Again, the Coming to America films.
Mm-hmm.
And this is on top of just a ton of comedy material, plus, you know, the whole Saturday Night Live thing that he did for eons.
Yeah.
I can't imagine somebody putting together a body of Americana movie, watch this and you'll start to understand American culture or whatever. I can't imagine that not containing at least one of his films, if not a ton of them.
Yeah.
Just because he's done so many. And they're funny. Whether they were popular or not, it's another matter.
Yeah.
But he's definitely got the chops. And there are aspects of Eddie Murphy in general, and this character in specific, that I think spawned many other characters. The James Carter character from Rush Hour is either directly or indirectly derivative of this.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't think that's the only one by a wide margin. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's a fun character. I think there are going to be other riffs on it over time. I would just like to see more kind of breakout characters like that that almost become a new archetype.
Yeah.
And again, not to say it was a revolutionary, never been seen before kind of a thing, but there's a matter of, have you seen it before and has it been done better before?
Yeah.
And this is one where just the execution was just well done throughout.
I agree.
Anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
Thanks for listening to this episode. If you liked this episode, please spread the word about the Comic Book Page podcast by telling your friends and posting a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And please, join our Slack community and let us know what you thought of this episode. I do this podcast because I enjoy talking about comics. So let's talk about comics. The show notes, forum, and instructions for how to join our Slack channel can be found at www.comicbookpage.com. The opinions of the co-hosts and guests are their own. The Comic Book Page podcast is copyright John Mayall. And thanks again for listening.